Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
A singer in a smoky room, the smell of wine and cheap perfume. For a smile they can share the night. It goes on and on.
Cruise, because I know the opportunity of cruises that you had today, and having been in the shipyard industry for many of the years of my youth, and having done what you had the opportunity to do, thank you for not doing that, because that's one of the coolest things ever, and I was deathly jealous of those of people and friends and family that are doing it.
So this was Ray Palmer, he's at Pensacola Sports, talking at the TDC meeting, the Tourism Development Council meeting last week, that basically wound up getting pushed to Monday. But I wanted to be sure that we talked about this before Monday, and we'll probably even talk about it more on Monday, because the Escambia County Commission is considering building a giant sports facility up in Ashton-Brosnahan Park in Cantonment off of 10 Mile, and, you know, using, trying, or considering, you know, trying to get the commission, the council, I always want to call them a commission, the council, the bed tax spenders, tourism, right, to spend somewhere between $40 and $60 million on this facility. And, you know, I've lived here 10 years, and as long as I have lived here, some things have been true. We have been trying to develop Community Maritime Park. The tech park has been empty. Almost most of that time. OLF 8 has been undeveloped. Not quite. That, you know, not quite the full time. The Bay Center has been falling apart and been very expensive and losing us money. We've been trying to figure out what to do with that. And we've been trying to build a sports facility or convention center or both. And so here we are yet again with this pitch to, you know, put, like I said, you know, 48 to 62, I think, is the actual specified range of the cost for this thing. And Michael Rhodes from the county, the Parks and Rec guy, is, you know, a big supporter of this project. They put a lot of time into this. This is, by the way, it's a little bit unfair, or it's a little bit not fair to say it this way, but this is clearly one of Stephen Barry's big personal projects. Like, he has been repeatedly storing whatever political capital, money, whatever he can to make this happen. This is a big deal for him. Of course, he's up for re-election in November. But, you know, making this happen has been a passion project for him as well.
As you all know, and I grew up here, went to the University of West Florida. The University of West Florida is the only true competitive indoor sports facility of its type. University of West Florida is a growing university. Its priority is the students, as it should be. It's very tough to get space, and we're great partners with the University of West Florida. But the bottom line is it's tough to get indoor event space at University of West Florida.
Yeah, I mean, UWF stuff is great, but, you know, they're using it for UWF things, right?
Brosnahan Park is a county-owned facility. It's a great facility. Brosnahan Park is county-owned. It currently has 13 lit soccer fields. It's home to major soccer events in the youth sports world. It's also home to the NAIA National Championship this coming up November. And it's also hosted two SEC Women's Soccer Championships with a third to follow in late October into November. What does this demonstrate? Folks like coming to Escambia County for the sports. It demonstrates people like Brosnahan Park.
Yeah, all of which is true, for sure.
As I said, I grew up here. Long ago, Brosnahan Park out in that region in Cantonment may have been thought of as a little far out. The truth of the matter is Brosnahan Park is not far out anymore. It's in the hub of Escambia County. It's a major corridor out in the Highway 29, 9 Mile Road area with plenty of hotels, which will be covered later in the presentation.
I would say maybe. I don't know that I would describe Ashton-Brosnahan Park off of 10 Mile as center of it all. You know, You could definitely make that case for the old soccer fields, the debacle of all that, that is now going to be the trucking center and the Wawa and all that. 90%. Isn't that right? It's going to be a Wawa off 29, I think. Anyway, right there at W Street. That's centrally located. You know, the Superfund site on Palafox is centrally located. I'm not sure you can make the case that little old Ashton Brosnahan Park nestled in behind Tulane, isn't it? I think 10-mile road at that part. You know, I don't think you can make the case that central. But it's not that far either. Okay, it isn't. It's something that would be off 29 would be a little bit better location because of traffic, and we'll get to that in a second. But it's not terrible. It's just not. I wouldn't describe it as central either.
Home is county owned. It's a 14 acre. We have 14 acres on this property that's open, flat, and undeveloped. The undeveloped flat portion, we did the studies and working with Convergence. We feel that a 100,000 square foot building with 73,000 square feet of open column-free floor space compatible for sports events, expos, special events, and various diverse events will fit the bill for this type footprint. Again, it's 14 acres of open flat land that the county owns currently, already zoned for recreation, another key point.
Yeah, and those are all points to the positive, and there are a lot of points to the positive. I've looked at the overall plan for the site, and basically, you know, if you're going back on Ashton Brosnahan Road, right? I think I had that in my head. Past the schools, and then on the left, you've got all the soccer fields, and then to the end on your left, you've got the main, the really nice one. This would be to the right where that big open area is. And that area is where they want to put this site. And, you know, so it's back at the end of both 10 Mile and then the little road, Ash Brosnahan, that runs back in there. And, you know, they've got room to do it back there. It'd be 100,000 square feet, 73,000 square feet of usable space. And, you know, it's good. Now, Ronnie Rivera, who is quickly becoming my favorite member of the TDC, because he asks the right questions and he's so nice. Ronnie's such a sweetheart. He always asks so nicely.
How many people could you put in that facility?
I don't have that number right in front of me.
Ooh. they've got a massive study, 150 pages, that they did not bring or send to the commission, the council members. They had to ask for it. I've looked at it. I haven't read it all. I've looked over it, but, you know, it's massive. And, I mean, that to me, that was kind of a question I had. I'm just curious, you know, how many people do you put inside there? I mean, is it a 500? Is it 1,000? Is it 2,000? I don't really know, but it seems like a relevant question. He did say, though, parking spaces, which is a natural question for a facility like this.
One key component on this 14 acres, when we talk about how big the building is going to be, 700 plus parking spaces is in the current design.
And though that's a lot, it didn't seem like maybe enough just to me as a layman, because I'm thinking, okay, so 700, and if you bring three or four people, even that's only you're at best pushing 3,000, you know, seems like not maybe enough, because I would think a facility like this would actually have a lot of seating space, especially if it's going to offer other things. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's just more like a giant gymnasium. Anyway, back to the, you know, what they're going to do with it, what's going to be there if they get this all approved.
It would have 8 full court basketball courts that can be transformed into 16 hard court volleyball courts. Hardwood has been recommended in this study for longevity and maintenance, and it transforms into open floor space for expos and various other activities as well.
Which is good. I mean, just to give you a sense of what they could do in there. Of course, you notice he didn't say the P word. How many pickleball courts, man? I think some people would want to know. It says a $37 million economic impact per year. Also that, you know, the school district has a need for open activity space, indoor space, and would serve not only the schools right there on that road, but also, you know, generally, regionally would serve the schools. And this is one of those, like, keep this concern in mind, traffic.
We have had discussions with Mr. Leonard and his team early on in this process about could we possibly transverse school board property on a second road entry into this facility, so you have two options for ingress and egress, and they were more than supportive. It will be a win-win for the school, and of course the soccer will also benefit, because you will then have the potential to have two entries and exits to the facility moving forward.
Okay, yes, but if you look at their plan, the traffic plan is, you know, you go in, you know, the main road you go in off of Ashton-Brosnahan Road, okay? And remember, you've got this, like, long simmering complaint about flooding on the other roads in that vicinity. You know, there's been a lot of people show up at the county commission meeting to talk about, maybe it's off of 9 Mile, maybe it's off of Long Leaf. I'm sorry, let me put that on hold for a second because I could have the wrong streets here. But traffic is definitely a concern because everybody's going to be getting in off of 10 Mile, which is this, you know, small little, you know, two-lane road with a semi-median, then Ashton-Brosnahan, which is a little two-lane road that goes back there. And then you got all these cars coming in and out, and they're going to build a road behind the school that's going to connect over to Jack Kaufman Lane, which is another very small road on the eastern side of all the school properties. They're not talking about connecting to Chemstrand, which would have been that would have been a plan that would have I mean, you probably can't do it, okay? There's probably not the space to do it. Maybe there's a dead end off of a little tiny road called Breezy Acres that would go to Chemstrand. Chemstrand's a significant road, and if you could put the people on and off Chemstrand, that would solve a lot of the traffic congestion in the area. But if you're putting them off of this old Jack Kaufman Lane, honestly, as a traffic matter, I think this is going to be kind of a nightmare for the residents in that area and just for backups. I mean, if you're talking about 700 cars, you know, again, that is, or even if it's only 500 cars, that's a big concern. A couple of buses for an SEC tournament and some spectators handles it okay. Although I haven't been there during the tournament, I'm guessing that that went okay because I didn't hear about big problems. But you're putting a really high number of cars into the very back end of a kind of a narrow access couple of roads. That's not something we should gloss over so easily, especially if you're talking about this being a, you know, routinely used kind of venue for all kinds of stuff. So I'm not saying their plan can't work. I'm not saying their plan is non-viable. I'm saying it's just that was the question I had, and based on the study and based on what they proposed, I didn't have my my questions answered completely. Traffic congestion is going to be one issue for them. The cost, obviously, $48 to $62 million, and then competition because there's a lot of other facilities in the region that people are building. Now, Michael Rhodes says we're going to have meeting space, vendor space, a second floor observation, you know, perimeter deck where there's going to be a walking path that the locals can use, of course. It's going to have, you know, tourism value and also community benefit. It's going to be kind of a combo thing where the county and locals and schools and, you know, then all of these competitive events can use it. Also for, you know, for exercise and all of that kind of stuff. So he gave the big pitch. And after he was done with the pitch saying, you know, this is a big win for everybody in the area.
This project can be a win-win for everybody, the retail in the community, the restaurants in the community, and also the local citizens in the area. And this is something that will stand the test of time, we feel.
Second point of not so much objection, just question. There's not a lot of hotels in that area. There's not, almost none. Like, and it's okay because the schools that compete are going to stay out at the beach. But what about all the parents? You know, there are not a lot of, that just area just doesn't have them. It's kind of like Beulah, in my opinion. It's, you know, if you get out to 9 Mile, yes, there's restaurants and hotels. And if you get onto 29, there's restaurants. But like right there at 10 Mile, where would people go eat? Well, maybe we bring in food trucks. Oh, okay. Okay. Interesting. I mean, they didn't talk about this. I'm just asking the question. Okay, but food trucks take up space. Space cuts into parking. I mean, you know, you just, I'm not saying it can't be solved. I'm just saying that when they say it's going to be a benefit for the restaurants and the retail and the locals are going to love it, what I'm thinking is, what retail, what restaurant? You know, there's nothing kind of right there. And then came the sort of moment because Jim Reeves, who just for perspective, keep in mind, is, of course, D.C. Reeves' father. OK. And he asks what I would consider to be the Reeves family question.
If it's going to cost, am I correct? It's going to cost $61,200,000 on the high side.
Yes, sir.
And it's one thing to build it. Where is the operational cost going to come from, and is there a deficit in operational cost?
There will be for sure a deficit in the beginning years operationally. Anytime a community invests in this, a lot of these facilities are subsidized at some capacity.
Okay, so it's not just $48 to $62 million. It's going to be debt service on the loan. right? Because what they're going to do is they're going to bond against future bed tax money. So if they put out a bond on, let's say, $60 million, you're talking about $4 million a year of debt service. And once you get down to page, you know, 120 or whatever it is in the study, and it's way buried in the study, that again, they didn't bring and send to the people initially, but it was requested. Year one is an operational deficit of $540. It's actually, I exaggerated, of 166 pages of the study. That's actually 152 because it's 12 pages of executive summary. Page 98 of the study. So at the very end, economic impact, it's a net loss of five. They're saying, they're hoping for a net loss of 500, not including debt service. Okay. First year, $300,000 the second year, and then they get to under $100,000 each subsequent year. And that's worth keeping in mind, that this is intended best case is to break even. It's not intended to be a moneymaker. And look, you know, parks don't make money. You know, a lot of facilities are owned by municipal. They don't make money. They're designed to be a benefit to the community, spin off jobs and collateral tax revenue for local option sales tax. You know, it's not so simple. But what the hoteliers are going to ask, and Mitesh Patel representing them on the board is saying is, okay, we're spending bed tax money. What do we get back in bed tax money? And the answer, it looks like, well, we're not sure that that quite adds up. We're hoping for a break even. And for a county that is continuously short of money for basic infrastructure, a lot of people are going to hear, wait, you want to spend $60 million to maybe break even? And I don't think that that break even includes the debt service on the loan. Okay, you're starting to lose me a little bit. And then, as Jim Reeves asks, it's not just how much, which they didn't want to get, they did not get into in the public presentation, but it's who pays for that operational loss. Is the TDC going to keep funding that? Is the county going to keep funding that? You know, it's the basic question that DC is always asking now is, let's not just build a park, let's talk about how we pay to keep operating it. Because if you take a, I know, painful example, but the Bay Center, it's wonderful to cut the ribbon and have a nice, shiny facility that doesn't sound good inside. We all know. But over the years, how many times have we heard people say, who made this bonehead decision to pay for this thing that costs us all this money and doesn't even give us the things that we want? I worry. I'm not against. I can be persuaded. But I'm telling you, I worry that this project that Stephen Berry has invested himself so heavily in to create a sportsplex in Ashton-Brosnahan Park is going to be the kind of thing that in 20 years, people are going to look at us and be like, who made this decision? Now, I hope it's not. But that's kind of where my general response to this is at the moment. I can be persuaded. 526 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Join Robbie Mott from Trek Bicycle Store Pensacola today at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Robbie will be sharing his years of expertise on cycling, how to select your perfect bike, best maintenance practices, on and off-road safety, plus the accessories you may need to provide you with the best overall biking experience. Trek Bicycle Store Pensacola on Pep Talk.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
I can't wait for golf this weekend, huh, buddy? Time flies. Love you, man. Oh, don't forget your knee brace again. We aren't in college anymore.
Moments together matter. So help protect yourself from RSV. If you're 75 or older or 60 plus with a chronic condition like asthma, COPD, heart disease, or severe diabetes, you're at higher risk of landing in the hospital from RSV. And there are no prescription RSV treatments. Check eligibility and schedule your RSV vaccine at VaxAssist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
You might wonder, John Legend, how do you keep your voice sounding so legendary? Honey, and how do I keep my protection against COVID-19 up to date? With a COVID shot this season, designed for recent variants.
You can get your COVID-19 shot when getting your flu shot if you're due for both, as recommended by the CDC.
The fresher, the better.
Ask your healthcare provider about getting this season's COVID-19 shot when getting your flu shot.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, Pep Talk. Mornings at 9, right after Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Excellent.
When the phone booth turns white, that's when I'll come on.
Good morning, 529 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David.
Well, thank you, Andrew, and good morning. A lot of big stories yesterday, so where to start? A big development in the school shooting earlier this week in Georgia. The father of the suspect has now been arrested and is facing multiple charges after saying that he purchased that gun as a gift for his son, and that was after he had been questioned by the FBI last year regarding the online school shooting threat.
Yeah, and charged with what? Involuntary manslaughter, four counts, two counts of murder, eight counts of aggravated assault, all of that. Yeah, like, you know, they're treating the father as a crucial contributor to the crime.
Yeah, and we're seeing this more and more often now with the, the parents.
It's at least the second one I can think of.
Absolutely. Also yesterday, another big story, Hunter Biden now pleading guilty in the federal tax trial in Los Angeles.
No. That's just Russian disinformation.
I knew I shouldn't
click
that link.
I don't even think you should say that on the air. We should suppress that from the algorithm.
It looked like the Washington Post, so I thought I could trust it.
Okay, all right, fair enough. You had a third one? You said there was a bunch.
I hear the music play. I think that's all the time I got.
All right, fair enough.
We'll have more later.
We will have more later. Of course, the commissioning for the USS McCool is going to be tomorrow. It is open to the public. I haven't checked to see if there are still seats. They were putting out 2,000 chairs yesterday. Of course, it's also supposed to rain. And this is not an under-the-tarp kind of an event. But we did get to go out and see the Blues fly by them yesterday. And Fat Albert. Videos on our Facebook page. Pretty cool.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. The 14-year-old suspected school shooter will make his first court appearance later this morning inside a Barrow County, Georgia courtroom. Cops say Colt Gray killed four inside Appalachian High School. His 54-year-old father, Colin Gray, now faces serious charges for buying the weapon his son, cops say, used in the massacre.
The dad is now charged with four counts of involuntary manslaughter, two counts of second-degree murder, and eight counts of cruelty to children. So these are the most severe charges ever filed against the parent of an alleged school shooter.
Fox's Brooke Seaman, Hunter Biden stuns the court.
Judge Mark Scarsi put each of the nine charges individually to Hunter Biden, asking him how he pled. He said guilty nine times.
That's Fox's Jonathan Hunt in Los Angeles. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio, 92.3, 74 degrees right now. Cloudy and a little bit rainy here across the area today. The Escambia Sheriff's Office reported that a man was shot in Pensacola last night. The Sheriff's Office says that man was wounded on Triton Circle and Michigan Avenue and taken to a hospital in the area. So far, there's no word on any suspects. The investigation into that case continues. The Escambia Children's Trust now owes Escambia County more than $1 million in tax increment revenues that have accrued over the last several years. Now that after a decision yesterday by the Escambia Board of Commissioners, the Children's Trust had filed a request to be exempted from the tax, but commissioners voted unanimously to have them pay. The money will be paid into a trust fund that benefits the Community Redevelopment Agency. The county says those tax revenues will fund infrastructure projects such as sidewalks, lighting, security cameras, and they say it will improve the neighborhoods that the children live in. The U.S. Navy's newest and most advanced warship being commissioned tomorrow, the USS Richard McCool, an amphibious warship designed to transport Marines into battle. The commissioning ceremony being held at 10 a.m. Saturday morning at NAS Pensacola. Well, women are now the fastest first-time gun owners. Local gun shop owners confirming that gun sales have been soaring across Northwest Florida, but here's the twist. Apparently, it's fathers bringing their daughters to purchase pistols. Many gun purchasing customers are reportedly buying the guns to protect themselves rather than their property. Over the last 3 years during the Biden and Harris administration, the trend has changed from men to women. Artificionados prepare for an amazing September. Pensacola Underground A to Z is a new exhibit located at the 309 Punk House. It's a look into Pensacola's underground scene from early union efforts, anti-war protests, music trends, and gender fights over the years. More than 400 pieces featured with items such as guitars and the bolt cutter used by Pensacola homeless advocate Mike Kimbrell, who was arrested in 2022 after cutting a lock off of a portable downtown toilet. That exhibit running through September. 533 at News Radio 92.3. Well, just a few days now after that school shooting that killed four and injured nine others in Georgia, a Florida student now accused of making a school shooting threat. The Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office says a 15-year-old student was arrested after allegedly posting a shooting threat on Snapchat this week. Sheriff Chad Cronister says that behavior is not a joke, and his deputies will pursue anyone who makes those threats. The 14-year-old shooting suspect in Georgia had been questioned regarding an online threat about a year before this week's shooting happened. It is 5:34. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather.
It's shaping up to be a soggy end to our week, expecting periods of rain on and off all throughout the day today. High temperatures will be in those upper 70s, but still feeling a little bit warmer than that once you factor in that humidity. And going into tonight, those rain chances are sticking with us. Temperatures in those lower 70s. And as we head into the day on Saturday, still going to see that chance of rain as we head into the first half of our weekend. I'm meteorologist Marian Caldwell in the WEAR First Warning Weather Center.
And right now it's 74 degrees in Pensacola, 75 in Gulf Breeze, 75 also in Milton. Our next news at 6 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
DeFranco Gas is your local expert in all things gas. Local Tom DeFranco and Company has been installing and servicing your gas power business and home needs for over 38 years and is here to help make your gas life easier. Tankless water heaters, gas grills, gas fireplaces, gas heating systems, and DeFranco Gas gets your home and business storm ready with installation and servicing of whole generator systems. All things gas. DeFranco Gas, your local gas service provider. Member of the Better Business Bureau. DeFrancoGas.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Helms, and I'm running to be your next county commissioner in District 4. I'm a long-term business owner, military veteran, and ordained clergy. As a fiscal conservative and Second Amendment supporter, I have a passion for public service with strong community engagement. As your next county commissioner, I will have a strong impact on crime and gun violence, affordable housing, and combating high insurance rates. I'm asking for your support and your vote on November 5th.
Paid for by Ron Helms, Democrat County Commission, District 4.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
When hurricanes are brewing and heading to the Gulf, tune in to News Radio Pensacola for complete storm coverage you can count on. We have direct reports from the Emergency Management Center and from the National Hurricane Center to give you the latest on the storm's path, strength, and impacts. Stay informed and stay safe with comprehensive hurricane coverage heard on News Radio Pensacola. Now on 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, and on our News Radio Pensacola mobile app.
Eric Gilmore, the director of public safety, is a oversees the firefighters and is himself a volunteer firefighter. I like what you did there with that, John. That's good. Yesterday, we had a really good conversation with Director Gilmore. Eric, welcome welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, you Ring of Fire stepper into her or whatever.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. A lot of stuff to get to with you. I create these lists of the next time I interview such and such, I add a question and I add a question. I've got like 12 things on my list for you. So, and you and I talk fast, so it'll be good. The first one, though, the reason this morning in particular is because the Escambia County Commission is going to take up a question later on today in the afternoon meeting. Writing off, or not really writing off, but transferring ownership of the $10 million in bad uncollectible debt for EMS, right?
That's correct. And that, I guess, bad debt write-off is a negative term, right? So that is correct. That is coming up. Two things that happen this time of year. One is the height of the hurricane season and bad debt write-off for it. So,
right.
But what it is individuals, and it's a 12-month cycle. So we respond to you. We transport you to the hospital. We send you the bill. We don't receive funds. So we work with you for 12 months. We call you. We send you letters. We ask you to call in so we can put you on a payment plan. We do whatever we can to help get the bill paid. And after 12 months, if we can't get anything collected, then we send it to a debt collection service. So it's not writing it off. It's sending it to a third-party debt collection service where we won't get the full amount. We get a percentage of what they collect for us on our behalf. So that's what that is. It's like a credit card company. You don't pay your credit card, they send you to a debt collection after they tried to reconcile with you, and they go from there. So that's what it is. And it's around $10 million. Mm-hmm. And it's about the same as it was last year, honestly. So we didn't go up and we didn't drop it, unfortunately. But we're within the national average. About 18 to 20% is the national average. And we're right there in the national average of what, ambulance services are seeing for debt collection on ambulance transports.
And we had 1 year where it was really bad in 2020 where it was pushing 45%. We've had other years that were more like 12%.
Yes.
And it fluctuates quite a bit, $9, $5, $7, $10 million over the last 5 years, which, by the way, I appreciate that you included in the material backup for the meeting today some of these comparisons and histories. That really helps. And this is one of those issues where, I'm certainly willing to criticize the county commission when they deserve it. This is an issue where they got a lot of criticism, and I don't think they deserve it. This is pretty normal in the industry. It's hard to collect debts, especially when there's no upfront restriction on using the service. Anybody can call EMS 911. Anybody can get a transport. And then you're tasked with collecting on people who are homeless or people who are drug addicts or people who simply have no means to pay. Right. And you can't really send, Lenny and Buster down with their batons to collect. Like, you have only certain things you can do. And then you got to send the debt to somebody else. Right.
No, that's absolutely correct, Andrew. And I'm not going to sit there and put your name on a list. And when we pull up to your yard, we look at the list and go, oh, I'm sorry, you haven't paid
right
in the last 12 months, so we can't provide you service. No, sir. We still provide the service. So you're absolutely right on that. It's just one of those unfortunate things as part of the business. It's the ugly side of the business that we don't get the money collected in. But it's something that has to be done. Because it's monetary. So it has to go to the board for approval because it is money and it's out there. And it's something that we do annually. We can do it quarterly and make the number look small, but why? it is what it is. So, we just go from there.
Speaking of EMS, you got a new chief, right?
That's correct. Christopher Watts joined us almost 3 weeks ago now, so he's hit the ground running. I appreciate the energy he's brought to the organization. He's been out in the field for the last 2.5 weeks working with crews, getting his feet wet, meeting with community partners, doing all the things he's supposed to do as a chief to keep the relationships we have. We didn't have bad relationships, but maintain relationships, let our partners know who he is, what he's about, and working with the crews. So I'm pretty excited about his energy he's brought to the group and what he's done so far in the last week, two and a half weeks.
It seems to me like the biggest gap right now in EMS, aside from all the logistical issues and coverages and wait times and all that, it seems to me like the biggest gap is trust. That the personnel, of course, the union voted no confidence. Chief Tarcell, he wound up having to leave eventually. What is Chief Watts doing to cultivate trust and build relationships so that that problem can be fixed?
Well, first and foremost is getting out with the crews and meeting the crews. So talking to the crews, running calls, getting on scene with them, meeting them at the hospital, those things like that. That way they see who he is. He can talk to them. If we got some downtime, he can talk to them and address them. But prior to that, Chief Stevens had already tried working on some of that stuff. Chief Stevens was out and about. We were meeting with the union leadership. Chief Watts has met with union leadership. So we want to have a good line of communication. Communication, that's going to be it right there for the most part. If we communicate effectively, let our staff know what's happening, and work within those, work with the union and talk to those guys and sit down at the table and just be upfront. What are we doing? Where's our vision? Where we want to go? How we want to get there? And how we need the employees' help to get there to achieve the goal. So communication is going to be big.
One of the other things, I know there's a public trust issue as well because of information flow and because of the wait times. And for a long time, I was reading the weekly director's report for Holic Safety, and it included, time held, number of calls held at different times of day, hospitals, what they were doing to divert and all of this. Then in January, that stopped being produced. And you and I have had conversations about what's the right way to report that data. How do you quantify the difference between waiting on, one Delta versus five Alphas, or, all of that kind of stuff? Can you at least maybe commit to me that we're going to find a way to report that information going forward so that we as the public can track? I mean, honestly, you know, the ideal would even be on a website where we could see, here's how many calls, here's how we're doing. Because if you can't, if there's not a metric, if you can't see it, it's hard to know it's being fixed, right?
Yeah, and you're right, and we'll work on that. But it's hard to – so when our dispatchers send fire out and say EMS is holding, and then, you know, within 45 seconds of the unit frees up, was it really holding, or is it just a delay for 45 seconds?
I completely agree. Context matters tremendously. I completely agree.
Exactly, exactly. So there's some metrics we got to look at and some parameters. And we're also looking at some other things when you hear interfacility transfer. Well, an interfacility transfer is not always a freestanding. It could be a skilled nursing facility, assisted living facility, or something with a nursing staff where they have metrics where they, you know, a unwitnessed fall to them is a high priority call, and they call it, the patient's up talking, conscious, alert, but they had to ship them out. And we're looking at maybe utilizing some other services to try to handle those type calls, which would not put a burden on the home calls to the 911 or in the street type calls. So we're trying to clean some of those things up so we can get some good metrics and understand when we say we're holding calls, what are we truly holding?
Yeah, and I, again, educate me, educate the public, teach us, be transparent, and so we can really understand, you know, how to think about these things. Otherwise, it's, well, this guy who is a friend of mine in EMS says they're holding six calls, or, you know, that's the right problem you're up against is perception. But, you know, keeping people informed so that we can, you know, track it and then know that we're making progress, which, of course, we all want to do. We are in the middle of hurricane season. I know your heart is always, you're at your core, you're a volunteer firefighter and an emergency management guy. In fact, the governor has sent you all over the state to help them better manage the situations. And so we appreciate that and stay here. I've said that many times. But, okay, I've got a weird public safety question that I knew you would have an answer for. And it's one my wife actually asked. So if you drive into water, every once in a while people drive into water or they get caught in a flash flood. We, of course, have hurricanes, tropical storms, flash flooding happens. Don't drive in, you know, turn around, don't drown, all that stuff. If people wind up in the water in their car and the windows are closed, if you're underwater, the pressure makes it so you cannot open the windows. It's a real problem for people in their cars and safety, and people drown because of this. And the advice is, well, you got to break the window. Well, you can't break the window. It's too hard to break. So they make these little devices where it's like a hammer. You hit the window. And sometimes they come with a cut for you can cut the safety belt as well.
Yeah.
The problem is, okay, that's part one. Part two is a lot of cars are made with now shatterproof glass, safety glass, windshields. You know, you can hit them a bunch and they're not going to break because of they don't want the windshield to break. And sometimes even side windows and sometimes rear windows. And so the question for you is, when people are thinking about this, if they want to think about the danger of that, how should they solve this problem?
Good question. Good question. So being in Florida, we have a lot of bodies of water, and you're absolutely right. We get a lot of flooding, and we are we have the most submerged vehicle deaths in the U.S. because of all our bodies of water, especially in all the canals in South Florida. So
right.
To overcome that. So once you get in the water, first and foremost, there is a period of time where the car will float. So if the car is floating, you're not going to be able to open your door against that pressure. You're absolutely right. So if you're able to, first and foremost, roll down the window first. You should be buckled up as well. You got to survive the impact first. So unbuckle, roll down your window, and escape your vehicle or help anybody out. So if you, in that floating period, if you can get the window down, get it down. But they also make those devices, as you said, if the window gets submerged or your window's underwater and it's pressure on the window, it's hard to roll down. The hammer is a good tool if you've got availability to swing it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to hit the center of the window. The windshields are, you know, tempered laminated glass, so those are hard to come out. You want to hit the corner, the bottom corner of the window, not the center of the glass. That's where your pressure points are on the windows. And one of the best tools is a spring-loaded center punch so that you don't have to swing anything. You just push the tool to it, and the spring in there makes a big popping mechanism. It pops the window in the bottom corner. So a spring-loaded center punch will be your best tool versus something swinging that you're trying to swing while you've got water and everything rushing in, and you're trying to think clearly.
You're panicked, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You just grab your tool. You go to the bottom corner of the window and you push and it pops and it will break the glass. We use those tools all the time in vehicle extrication or MBAs that we run,
uh-huh.
And they're very good tools. So
I think of it as like a stomp, like you press it and it's just going to thwap the window basically and cause it to break. And it's interesting you mentioned the thing about being at the bottom of it, because you tell me if I'm wrong, the top of the window is going to have a lot more flex to it, whereas the bottom is going to have a lot more rigidity to it, and that's why striking it there, and as you say, swinging, you may not have the physical ability to swing, or there might be water in your way. That's why that kind of device is better. But do I have that kind of understand that right?
That is exactly right. So, like I said, a spring-loaded center punch, a very simple tool, easy to use, and, you know, everybody gets one of those things, you want to try it out, but I wouldn't go try that unless you was in a
burger. Unless you really want to buy a new window.
Exactly.
All right. No, thank you. That really helps answer the question, and I know it may not be all that common of a thing, but like many things in public safety, as you said, you know, this is a constant problem of a sort in Florida. And if we can save one life or two lives, you know, hey, it was well worth the time spent talking about it and thinking about it. One of the other things that I did want to ask you about is the status of the firehouse in Beulah. I know we kind of did a ribbon cutting, but it still wasn't quite operational yet. When will that come online? Do we know yet? What are we waiting for?
So I don't know the actual timeline on that one.
Okay.
We were waiting on bay doors. Good news was the bay doors were delivered last week. I drove out to Beulah yesterday. The company had two of the four bay doors installed on the front of the building, so that's coming along pretty good. There's a couple of odds and ends punch lists that they've got to do still, interior. But I suspect I hate to give you a timeline.
Sure, I know.
It's closer than it has been before, Andrew. It's the move-in date.
So's the baby delivery. It's closer, you know?
Right. Okay, fine.
I got you. All right, fair enough. Well, we're making progress, which is a good thing. Yeah. I don't know if you are involved in this, but one of the items on the agenda today is an active shooter notification system inside the Ernie Lee McGehee building downtown. Instead of just having a single alarm that doesn't say much, this would be a active shooter on the premises kind of alert. I know it's a more information systems people that came up with this, but were you involved in this at all? Is this something, I mean, you guys talked about this?
I was not involved in this.
Oh, okay.
It was risk management. Mark Bartlett and his crew did an analysis on the building and determined that we did not have a building-wide notification system.
Gotcha.
Of course, we got building-wide fire alarms. And, you know, a fire alarm is not something you want to pull during an active shooter because you don't want to bring all the targets outside or muster in one area, right? So having a notification to the building, Mark Bartlett and risk management was in charge of that one.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, I'll look forward to the conversation. It might just be in a consent agenda, so we don't get much conversation about it. But I'm looking forward to that. Hey, I still have like half my list is left. We'll have to have you on some other time. There's always stuff I want to ask you. And even though you talk fast and I talk fast, we still never get through it all. But I did want to give you one plug minute here where you can talk about it is hurricane season. We are in the peak of it right now. And the new word is not 3 days, but 7 days, right?
That is correct. 1 week ready, sir. That's the slogan we're going with, and that's just for everybody to have their personal preparedness items ready. You know, cases of water, non-perishable food items, things for your kid. Don't forget about your kids. Don't forget about your pets and your medications and your elderly. So make sure you've got a good supply of your medication. So we're asking everybody to be 1 week ready. And if you'll have those things and be prepared, it'll help us go a long way to get to recovery a lot faster, so we won't be doing a lot of responses. And that gives us time to get the pods in here, get things established, the resources for the public, and get things going back on track. So, yes, 1 week ready. We are getting into the height of hurricane season. Thanks for bringing that up. There's several areas that we're watching out there. Nothing looks promising like it's going to develop anything, but you never know. Because we do get rapid intensification in the Gulf of Mexico. I want everybody to remember that something can just break into the Gulf, and it'll rapidly intensify like Hurricane Michael did. That one caught everybody off guard.
Yeah.
So it's time to be vigilant, time to make sure you're weather aware. And we are having, you know, we'll have rain today and tomorrow due to a disturbance that kind of circulated off Texas. So we'll be seeing parts of that coming through the area today and tomorrow.
I'm gonna say it a way that you probably wouldn't say it, but I'm gonna hope you're gonna give me an amen when I'm all done. If your plan is it's not gonna be a big deal, you're gonna get rescued, there's gonna be shelter space available, that's not a plan. Or maybe I should say that is the same exact plan that dead people make.
Hope is not a plan, amen, Andrew. Thank you, sir.
Well, it's a morbid way to say it, but that's what we want people to think about. Have a plan,
that's
be
right.
Informed, know what you're doing, and then don't get caught by surprise. Eric Gilmore, he is the Director of Public Safety for Escambia County. Always a great source of information and excellent leadership in our DPS. Eric, thank you so much for the time and for what you do, sir. I appreciate it.
Andrew, thank you, and thank you for getting the message out, and I appreciate you.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks so much. Eric Gilmore, Director of Public Safety. Good to talk to you. Always 5:53 here on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. One thing I want to just note for you. Brent Kearney from Channel 3 got an amazing picture of the Blue Angels behind the McCool the other day. Fantastic photo. We also have somebody who got another amazing picture of the Blue Angels yesterday. Not with the McCool in the background, but with a leaping dolphin in the foreground. I thought it was fake. I mean, it's so impossibly rare that I thought, oh, that can't be real. No, that's a real photo. Anyway, it's up on our Facebook page. You could check it out. John, am I right in describing this as an unreal photo?
Yes.
It is from yesterday's practice because they were only practicing five jets yesterday. So it was three jets in the diamond and the dolphin in front. I mean, wow. That's all I got to say. It's pretty wow. Hey, if you're thinking about buying or selling a home or trying to decide what's the right time to do it, you know, we got these economic reports coming out. We got the prospect of lowering of interest rates. We've got the changes in the structure of commissions for realtors from the, you know, seller paying all to maybe the buyer paying some and fluctuating rates or at least adjustable rates, all of that stuff. You want to know what the market is doing. Is it finally going to be a break in the pricing? Is it going to come back down? Our price is going to be down in the future? Or is the prospect of declining prices mean that all of the investors who've been kind of sitting on the sidelines for 3 years are going to jump back in and drive prices right back up? I don't know. But Christine Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, they'll know. That's why you ask them. That's why they actually get paid to understand this stuff. And me, I get paid to talk on the radio. So call her. Talk to her. She loves to meet people and explain real estate to them. She's got 175 homes that they sold last year, which is amazing. And just like I said, loves to meet people, talk with them, and talk real estate. She's kind of a nerd about it in a good way. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
Join Jim's Firearms for a 10th anniversary celebration on September 20th and 21st. They're partnering with local favorites like Badass Coffee, Key Nutrition, and more for an unforgettable event. Indulge in delicious food from La Casita Food Truck and 850 Barbecue. But that's not all. They're having numerous firearm raffles with all proceeds benefiting the Save Underdogs Foundation. Stop by Jim's Firearms at the corner of Sorrento Road and Blue Angel Parkway, September 20th and 21st, to celebrate a decade of community support. Online at jimsfirearms.net.
At the height of hurricane season, are you sure your data is backed up? I'm Nathan with Data Revolution, and this is your cybersecurity tip of the month. Hurricanes can cause severe damage to buildings and IT infrastructure. Test your backups now to ensure your access in an emergency. Businesses along the Gulf Coast trust Data Revolution for their cybersecurity and communications needs. Visit datarevs.com for more information.
Seeking the pulse of economic strength?
The Port of Pensacola is more than a name. It's the driving force behind Northwest Florida's progress. Home to over 20 major businesses, from Cemex Materials to General Electric Wind Energy, and now the world-renowned American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, they've been a catalyst for prosperity and growth. Ready to shape the future? Visit portofpensacola.com and discover how they power the region's success.
Are you a business owner? Do you love sports? I bet your audience does too. What if I told you I could help you reach your audience while they are at a sporting event? Hi, I'm Lexi with ADX Digital, and I can help you connect with your audience. Call 850-262-6000 and build a digital campaign with me today. ADX Digital is locally owned and part of the ADX Communications family, inclusive of Cat Country 98.7, News Radio 92.3, ESPN Pensacola 99.1, and Pensacola's Playlist 94.5.
No matter how you listen, you can rely on News Radio Pensacola to keep you informed and safe when storms strike. You can listen on our mobile app.
Do you know the Klingon proverb that tells us revenge is a dish that is best served cold?
It is very cold in space.
Story. I'm gonna tell you about my town. I'm gonna tell you a big fat story, baby.
All right, everybody, scream it with me. Con! Con! There's always an echo. You
watch Star Trek 2. 5:58 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. I've seen way too many movies. God, Lord, shut up. I don't need to hear the Standells three times. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Yesterday it wouldn't play. Now it won't stop
playing. Exactly. I can't control this thing. It's like, you know, it's possessed.
Well, former President Trump will be in New York today in a courtroom where he is appealing the judgment in the E. Jean Carroll assault case. Texas researchers say they've discovered an antibody that could protect against all variants of COVID-19. Researchers at UT Austin completed a study on hybrid immunity against the coronavirus. They say they found an antibody that can neutralize all known strains of the virus, and the findings may help protect people against all current and future variants of COVID.
All right, very good, David. Thanks so much for the update. 5:59 here on News Radio 92.3. Coming up next hour. Why would Bradley Whitford, the actor, get canceled? And what about punctuation and text messages?
You're listening to News Radio 92.3.